Hello, everyone. I'm Ashanaya Swami, and we're continuing our fireside chats. Let's start with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Master Paramhansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, dearest Divine Friend Swami Kriyananda, humbly we bow to you all. Help us to open our hearts. Help us to calm our minds. Help us to refine our spirits, that we may see this world through the eyes of God and act as His instruments in everything that we do. Om. Peace. Amen. Well, I've been going through the way of Ananda Sanghi for the last 4 or 5 days. And I was going to do it again, just continue with that topic this morning, but there's a lot happening in the United States right now that is a bit disconcerting to people. So I had planned to address this, and I may still on this coming Sunday when I'm giving the service here in Palo Alto. But with so many people so worried about what's going on, I thought it'd be better if I spoke to it today. I was reluctant. I am reluctant to speak about it for a very simple reason, is I don't have any answers. And I'm not even sure I have any really good ideas right now. But I certainly know from past experience when something is on everyone's mind and you try to talk about something else, it's kind of hard to make the point. There's a story in my book, Lightbearer, from about 2004, 2005. When we were with Swami at a vacation resort in Goa, India, and one night at dinner, he saw a group of people speaking, a group of five, two couples and a single man, sitting at a table, and as he put it, speaking a language he didn't recognize. And since he's traveled a lot and speaks 8 languages himself, I think he was drawn by God to go over to them. But he sat down with them, and it turns out they were from Iran, and they were speaking Persian. And Swami visited with him a little bit and asked about a man he'd known in college from Persia. He said, did he become well known? Swami said he seemed like the kind of man who would become well known. And they agreed that he had become a national figure. Swami asked, is he a good man? And they replied, the government says he's a bad man, so the people all know that he's a good man. That's just how they put it. And Swami came back to our table, and the next morning when he came to breakfast, he was carrying a small package with him. And as soon as he saw the Persian group there, he went over and sat at their table. And when he came back to ours, he didn't have the package with him anymore. And he told us that he had taken it over and given it to them as a gift. And he said to them at the table, he said, when good people have a bad government, he said, there's very little any individual citizen can do. He said, but at least we can be friends between ourselves. And then he gave them the gift. And as Swami started telling us this, he began to weep, because at that time they had a terrible dictator there, and the situation was very difficult for people of noble principles. Well, I'm not really taking a political stand at the moment, so I'm not really talking about that. But what we have to understand, and this is the point that's relevant, Swami said that national leaders do not create the karma of their country. They are elected because of the karma of the country. And he's even commented at a certain point that he didn't think even Jesus Christ, America was going in certain directions, he didn't even think Jesus Christ could change the direction. But even more than that, it's like karma doesn't happen in 5 minutes. It's not like what happens today is because what happened yesterday. Or even Master said something that is very complex to contemplate. He said, because we have the illusion of time, we imagine that things that happen sequentially are caused by one another. And he said, it's not really so, because the forces that cause events to unfold, especially events on the global and the national scale, like we're all caught up in at this point, he said, the karma that creates those builds for a very long time. And then this is the final symptom of it. Sometimes in these broadcasts and in others, I've talked about the causal, the astral, and the material plane, that the thoughts come first, then energy is applied to those thoughts, and then finally those thoughts are manifested. So by the time we're manifesting protest events and vicious mistreatment of each other that has such an impact, you know, the power of this is because it's been building and building and building and building, and it's finally burst through the surface. Earlier in one of these broadcasts, I know I was talking about the fact that Master made very serious predictions about very negative events that were going to unfold on the global stage. And Swamiji has talked about the fact that these are all things that we have to, like, now I'm not talking about individual response. I'm just talking about picking this whole thing up from the right string. So one, we won't feel so helpless, and two, we won't feel so scared. Now, that doesn't mean that we have a sunny future. It just means that we have to understand how we are being caught up in karma that is so much bigger than our individual ideas about it, that if we're going to work effectively with it, we have to work realistically with it. You know, what has happened in the last few days in Americas among those people who are not dark-skinned, I believe there has been a sudden realization of what it means to have a dark skin if you live in America. I remember a number of years ago, there was an African-American named O.J. Simpson, which some of you may remember. He was accused of a brutal double murder, and it was in Los Angeles. And it seemed, but I mean, I don't trust anything that's written in the papers, because whenever I know anything about a situation, I always find, almost always find, that the newspaper has distorted it. But it appeared that the man was guilty, but in the end he was acquitted. And he was acquitted because there was some question about the chain of evidence and whether or not the police department might have been able to monkey with the evidence. But three of the African Americans who live at Ananda happened to be in my house on the night that the O.J. Simpson verdict came down. And the three of them and another friend and I, five of us, went to dinner. We were at a restaurant. We were sitting in the restaurant. The entire restaurant was talking about the verdict. They were the only African Americans in the restaurant. And it was very interesting to me because two of them were from Los Angeles. And they said, well, of course you can't trust the police. It was just like, I mean, and these are not radical politicians. This is Ram and Diana, very deep Ananda devotees for a really long time, and Naidruva, who's a Harvard-trained lawyer. You know, these are not radicals, and they're not agitators. They're very deep, serious souls, and all three of them, and Ram and Diana, had both lived in L.A., just shrugged their shoulders, of course. You know, of course the police department would twist it against black people. That's just what they do. And it wasn't angry even. It was just, this is just a fact. And they talked about their growing up. Ram is a big, strong black man. He played football and is a powerful athlete. And I mean, it was just a matter of course. If you were on the street and you saw a police car, you tried without looking furtive, they told me, to get off the street. Just as simple as that. I had conversations with Naidruva's son, who also was 6'5", dark-skinned man, and he went to college at UCLA. And, you know, just as a matter of course, you know, just like if you, like a person who looks like me, if I saw a rabid dog or something coming down the street or somebody waving a machete, I would move aside. It was just a matter of common sense that you just never put yourself in a position where you might be in relation to the police. Just like that. And it was just like, wow, This is just like not the world I grew up in. And again, their complete common sense belief that, of course, the evidence would have been tampered with or certainly could have been tampered with. Why not? That's what they do all the time. Whew. So I do think one really good thing that has happened now is somehow for another, this thing has reached critical mass. And so I've lived with that knowledge from, this must have been 20 years ago even, but at the moment it was really shocking to me. But since then I've thought, well, of course, that would be the reality. Why would it not be the reality? But you see how long this has been building? It's just been building for decades and decades and decades. So, you know, things have momentum, and that's what we're getting caught in. We're getting caught in this momentum for the sake of cleanse, change, freedom, and light. We're not about to be destroyed, but we are about to be changed. At least this is what all the masters say. All the masters and all the prophets and all the psychics. It's just been out there for a very long time that the way things have been going, there's too much wobble in the system. Too much materialism, too much selfishness, too much if I can get it for myself. And what's making it difficult is what's making it difficult is at times like these, you get a very complex mix of population on the planet. You know, you just have people, we have a huge mix of agendas going on here. Master Swamiji said that most times the bell curve, if you want to put it, of the population is like a cigar. It's like most people are neither good nor bad. They just kind of hang out in the middle, live their lives the way they want to live them, and just try to get through. And then you have a few really good people and a few really bad people, but the majority is just more or less neutral. A mob that could be swayed, but just mostly neutral. What's happening now is that we're getting a population that looks like a dumbbell. Means it's very thin in the middle and it's very fat at both ends. So there is a very strong force of darkness incarnated on the planet at the moment. I talked about this when I was talking about Atlanteans, Romans, Indians. You all can look at the playlist and you can find them. But there's a very strong coterie of people who were born to destroy, and they're here getting ready to destroy, either with their anger or their violence, or I'm not quite sure what. I'm not a psychic. I can't see it. I'm not a saint. I can't predict it. But there's also a very big group of good people. And sort of that's what we're working with. It's polarizing is what's happening. And so that makes it much more extreme than when we could just sort of ride through the middle and nobody really had to take a position. Now, is that better? See, this is where you have to stand back for a moment. Is it better to be able to just ride through and never have to take a position? Or is it better to be challenged and actually ask yourself, who am I? What do I believe? Where do I stand? What do I feel to do? I have not yet felt, you know, to go out in the street and protest. I don't necessarily feel that's a wrong thing to do at all. I mean, that's how our country has always operated, which is through the political process and through people being willing to stand up for their beliefs. I feel I am very strongly standing up for my beliefs, and I have every day of my life for many, many decades, because the world is not just run by the people on the street with their weapons in their hands or their riot police uniforms or their peaceful protest on this side. That's the final manifestation of a tremendous power of thought. And in Autobiography of a Yogi, unfortunately, I was looking for the exact passage. I didn't find it this morning. But Master says that Jesus and Babaji are deeply concerned about specifically religious bigotry, race hatred, and a tendency, you know, toward violent solutions. Oh, and excessive materialism. Excessive materialism, selfishness, religious bigotry, race hatred, the very things they were dealing with. They're very concerned about it and have devised a plan for the upliftment and the salvation of the civilization, which is that people must change their consciousness. People must turn again and recognize ourselves as part of a greater reality. And that's what's trying to happen here. So as many people who have light skin are just suddenly kind of getting what it means to have dark skin, that's attaching ourselves to a greater reality. Suddenly, instead of seeing someone as different or not being able to walk in their shoes, there's been this sudden awakening. And you see, that's the beginning. Now, could that awakening have come in a less violent manner? You have to ask yourself the question. If anything less dramatic had happened, do you think the country would be as thoughtful and as concerned as it has become? But we're in a dumbbell, so that when one side becomes more enlightened, the other side becomes more intense. Because the whole reality of the moment, according to Yogananda, and he announced this 70 years ago, 1950, he said, and I, the words are scary, you don't know what a terrible cataclysm is coming. And he just said, everything will be shifted. And I mentioned this also in other contexts, that Master said America has very, very, very good karma. We are the Dwapar Yuga country. The founding of this country is unique. It was founded for religious freedom. Now, you have to understand, and I it's necessary to be very conscious and careful as we think about these things, because it has become popular to denigrate any good thing by emphasizing what's also wrong with it. And it has become popular to denigrate America as a country because we have made lots of mistakes. There's no question about it. But the way Swami put it, and think about this thought, he said, the mere fact that darkness is present everywhere, which is to say, a country can also make serious mistakes, that darkness is present everywhere doesn't mean that darkness is present in the same proportion everywhere. And so what we have to keep is we have to keep a sense of proportion. So even though there may be a black mark down the middle of something that is otherwise good, that doesn't mean that all that good isn't still present. And so if you look at a brutal dictatorship or a country where they regularly imprison and murder and torture their own citizens to keep the power, that's the proportion of darkness is much bigger than it is for a country which has essentially free and essentially good values, but sometimes bad things happen. And so America itself, and I'm not trying to be chauvinistic, it's just the objective facts, you know, where anybody could arrive here penniless and become either rich or famous or successful or, you know, brilliant, any number of things. It's just a wide open platform where hard work and who you are can alter your own fate. We're not just born into a class or a caste. Plus the vitality of the energy of this country to just create so much wealth. But we've made mistakes, and we have veered off. Too much materialism, too much greed, too much disregard for nature. I've talked about these things in other talks. I won't go into great detail. And bad karma, primarily for what we did to the American Indians. This is how Master put it. And self-evidently, you know, we haven't been ideal in our relationship to the multiculture and multi-races that inhabit this country. Small-minded people, cruel people, egoically motivated people also have power from time to time in this country. But there's also great goodness in the American temperament. But we're talking now about not just a country, but individuals, but it's relevant for this reason. Master said in the end of chaotic times, America's good karma will prevail. That's a very interesting way to put it. Swami says in The Path, in the chapter, at the one of the chapters at the very end, he said, this world is not run by prime ministers and presidents. He said it's actually run by the masters, that there is great goodness at the heart of the whole of the planet, because there's the power of these masters who are working for the salvation of all of us. But they have to work with the karma of the individuals, and they have to work with the karma of the country. And right now, we have many individuals on this planet who are acting out a lifetime in which they get to explore the power to destroy. And then there are a lot of good people here who have to find it within ourselves not to become frightened, and not to give in to this darkness. Do we go out onto the streets and protest? Well, that's an individual decision. Do we write? Do we think? Do we talk to each other? Do we meditate? Do we pray? And I don't mean that we pray, oh Lord, stop what's happening. Oh Lord, make it different. You know, it's that is a natural prayer, because no one wants to see anyone suffer. But we have to also remember the model of prayer that Jesus gave us the night before he was crucified, which has always been an extremely helpful model to me. Jesus is there. He's come to bring this glorious, uplifting teaching to this sincere world of people who love God. But there's a dark force that's also fighting against the light that he's bringing. And in the moment, Jesus knows that dark force for a time is going to have power over him. And it, you know, when he's actually arrested and is about to be crucified, and Pontius Pilate is trying to figure out an excuse to let him go, because Pilate's wife has had a dream in which she sees who Jesus is and tells her husband, do not be responsible for putting that man to death. You know, this will be a terrible thing for you. So that, among other reasons, Pontius Pilate is trying so hard to find a reason why Jesus won't have to be crucified. Wait, why he won't have to be responsible for crucifying him. And Jesus won't help him at all. He won't answer. He won't cooperate for his own freedom. And Pontius Pilate says, don't you know I have power of life or death over you? Jesus looks at Pontius Pilate and he said, you would have no power over me if my Father in heaven did not give it to you. And even now, Jesus said, I could call down legions of angels to rescue me, but it is God's will that I not. So you see, it's not always an obvious thing what the drama is. Jesus knew that this was a necessary thing. So Pilate reluctantly had to condemn him to death. So Jesus was crucified and died, of course, which set the stage for his resurrection. And the complete conquest by Jesus of all the darkness that was thrown at him by just simply rising in the light again was a far greater and more compelling expression of the power of God than merely for him to have escaped that fate. Now, I was actually going to say a different part of this, and I'll go back now. So at the night before, when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, before he was arrested, well, he was arrested that very night, but earlier, he's praying to God, why can't you just bring light into this world? You know, I'm your messenger. I could bring light into this world, but instead, these people have rejected that light. And the way Jesus puts it is, Lord, let this cup pass from me. This cup of bitter disappointment. Jesus wasn't trying to protect himself. He was praying for all those who were too blind to see his light. That's who he was praying for. And of course, he would want that. So he prays, let this not happen. Let it be different. But after he finishes saying that, he says, but thy will, not mine, be done. So that to me is the model, the perfect model of prayer, which is we have to be ourselves. if we're afraid, if we want preferences, if we wish other people to be spared suffering, of course we should say that. Of course we should tell God what's in our heart. But in the end, we also have to say, I know that I'm part of a bigger drama here, that something else is happening. And sometimes only by these cascading series of dark events does it motivate us to open our hearts and our minds to a brighter, greater reality that we can then come with light up the other side of it. I mean, as it is in the little, so it is in the big. I know many of us have been through difficult things in our lives. But I have to admit, I would never learn much of what I have learned if I hadn't been pushed into realities that I would never have chosen. So it becomes, and it is, a tremendous challenge to our faith in God. You know, do we believe what Yogananda wrote in Autobiography of a Yogi, that Jesus and Babaji together have planned the salvation of this age, and that what is happening now is actually the process of uprooting these darknesses which have polluted our country and polluted the world? I mean, the world is fighting over race and religion everywhere. And, you know, motivated by greed, the world is fighting over race and religion. And it has to end. It has to end because we happen to have incarnated in a rising age. If we were in a dark age, like Kali Yuga descending, then all of this would just continue to have dominance for a very long time. But we are in a rising age, and this is the transition. This is breaking us out of those old rigid forms and moving us into an age of energy. And the transition is not easy. And I think it's going to be very scary. Now, I would like, I mean, what I've said many times about this whole epidemic, pandemic that we've been caught in also, is I don't know whether there's going to be an intermission. Whether there'll be an intermission of comfort and ease and security, or whether this will be a rock rolling downhill for a while. The timing of this explosion that is happening now, which, you know, you can't tell from reading the press what is actually going on because everything is selectively presented. So one has to just sort of use intuition and common sense and gradually sort of sort out. But what's happening is not good, no matter how we look at it. And they're hooligans. And hooligans are not identified by the color of their skin. You know, they have all colors of skin, hooligans do. And hooligans are there to make chaos. They like making chaos. It gives them a sense of power to make chaos. And they revel in the sufferings of other people. That's a hard thing to say, but it's the truth. And many of them have incarnated because of the transition we're in. But those of us who are on the other side have also incarnated for now. And even if one never leaves one's home, never takes a public stand, we can all contribute mightily by the vibration of our consciousness. This world is run by vibrations, and the collective, uplifted, God-trusting, humanity-loving, truth-loving, but realistic attitudes of our mind is really the solution. And we were born for this. We were born to be challenged. You know, we've been, I'm sure, in many lifetimes, we've hung out in that squishy middle and never really had to strengthen our spines inwardly and be courageous in the face of challenge. So now we've incarnated where there isn't much space in the middle. And I want to make it clear, I'm not talking about specific actions. Actions are a decision afterwards. I'm just talking about the consciousness that we maintain. And perfect love casts out all fear. And the answer to everything is the prayer of Saint Francis, where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there's disharmony, let me sow peace. Where there's fear, let me sow courage, even just within our own selves. And we have to fight the inner battle first before we can be effective soldiers on the field of life. So here we are, and we were born for this moment, and it will take everything we have with God's grace to be able to stand unshaken, as Master said, among the crash of breaking worlds, which is, it's beginning to look like that. We'll see. But what we want is whatever our preferences are, and our preferences are self-evident: goodness, love, mercy, kindness, acceptance. But thy will, not mine, be done. And give me the strength, Lord, to walk with you wherever you wish to take me in this life. God bless you.